Just to give you background, thank you for the honour. It's a real privilege to come back. I've really been looking forward to it. And again, Alison and I mean, I started off as a young man on the farm, ended up sort of in New South Wales, moving to Queensland. My brother got a scholarship to a big Anglican boys' school on the Gold Coast, and university in Queensland, worked in Queensland schools, and I really had the privilege of working under a fellow called Colin Young, who was Dutch, and who really taught me about sort of Reformed theology and challenged me in my Christian thinking. I'd been a fairly new Christian at the time, and Alison, you know, talked about, you know, being in this startup school that started with 65 children and now has 1,500 up Emmanuel College. But realising over that change process that lots of things happen and lots of new people come on board, and thinking that which is pretty tight in the early days sometimes unravels over time. And that's, you know, school went through a number of challenges and changes. And we went off, I said, I've got to learn more. So we went off to University of London and Cambridge, and I did my PhD in the New Christian Schools Movement in England at the time, and had an amazing experience over there, and was offered, I mean, I'm just telling you this because it kind of will contextualise what I say, but I was doing some research in a school in Bristol. It was housed in George Muller, one of his homes for young children, and it was really wonderful, and we feel really excited about that. I was going to be the principal of this you know, great little Christian school, and then we had a meeting. We kind of went home, felt a little bit uneasy about it and prayed about it, and went back, had another meeting, came home and said, oh, is this the right thing to do or not? And then that night, Jack Mickelson, who was running CPCS then, rang up and said, we're moving the National Institute for Christian Education from Melbourne to Sydney, and we want to employ another lecturer, and would you be interested? And we just felt, you know, that was a call from God to hear things differently, and in some ways you don't always know why you make decisions. You hope that that's the right decision, but when I think of my own formative years, the best thinking that I was exposed to in Christian education was working alongside people like Bill Rusin and you know, Doug Blomberg and Stuart Fowler and Andy White and a whole lot of other people, and meeting people all over Australia. It was a really amazing time, and at that point I used to lecture in the master's program that they had, and I remember a couple of heads would say, well, you haven't run a school, so you really don't, you know, it's all theoretical. And someone approached me and said, we've got a school in Perth, do you want to go and head that up? And so we went to the Swan Group, and that was an incredible time in our lives. Our kids all had really fantastic grounding in Christian schooling there. I was also on the board of John Wycliffe Christian School for, I think, about 3 months or 4 months just before we went to Perth. So I don't think I made any mistakes, but it was in and out pretty quickly. And you know, so that was a lovely journey, and then at the end of that time I had 9 months as the CEO of the Swan Christian Education Association, and I told them at the time that I was applying for Scots as well, and that came up. My father was an old boy at Scots College, it's a Presbyterian school. And some people I shouldn't mention names, some people said, oh, you're going to the dark side, these church schools. And I said, well, you know what? They really want what we have. They've fought for 30 years to get a Christian board. They really want to have a Christian educational philosophy. They want someone to come in who knows how to do that and transform. And I've got to say, my 12 years at Scots has been an incredible transformation of that place. And everything I do comes from your organisation. My thinking, I feel so blessed when I am leading, because a lot of people say, how did you learn this? Where did you learn that? And how do you think that way? And I think that the really deep foundation that's laid in the Christian schooling movement in Australia is quite profound, and you should never underestimate your impact. And I think at the moment in Australia, I think we've got to work together a little bit more across any Christians working in any sector, and you know, try and find more in common rather than pitting ourselves against, because we're getting targeted significantly. I find it amazing over the last decade that, you know, having a fairly foundational, traditional Christian, you know, worldview is seen as some odd, obscure, you know, how can you believe that? So when did that happen so quickly? So we're under a lot of pressure. And for me, being in a boys' school, that's been challenged. And for me, being in a Christian school, that's been challenged. Having a church such as the Prezi Church, which is, you know, pretty conservative theologically, that's been challenged. So from all fronts, you know, we're copying it pretty heavily. And I guess what I want to share tonight with you is one of the things about Scots is, and I'll put this up, not to boast, but to give you a little bit of a hint about how you know, just to give a bit of an idea of kind of where we are, is so we have about 2,050 boys, so it's a big place. We run over, we've got two rural properties. Our Year 9 boys go off in the Kangaroo Valley on a 1,000-acre property and spend 6 months there living in an outdoor education setting. We've got an agricultural farm. We've got two rowing sheds. We've got all this stuff, which is nice, but trying to hold that together is a challenge as well. And as you can see, we're located in the eastern suburbs. We're on Victoria Road. I mean, this is all us, all through here. You know, Scots's premises are probably, facilities are probably worth nearly $500 million. But you can't eat that. You know, we still have debt. We don't have resources really in the bank, so we have to operate and keep ploughing back into the place all the time. So you have exactly the same problems, they're just on a slightly different scale. You know, just getting to know your teachers is actually a challenge, let alone all the kids. And so I think it's, just to give you an idea of that, you know, I've worked in smaller places. So I have been on boards. I'm on the board of the International Boys School Coalition, which is kind of leading 300 boys schools in the world, with, you know, Eton and Harrow and all those sorts of places. So I kind of talk to you as someone who has been on board. When I finished at NICE and I was at SWAN, I was on the board of NICE for about 3 or 4 years. So I know what it's like to sit in that chair, and I know what it's like to sit in this chair as a principal as well. And schools are all different in terms of that governance relationship, and I know particularly CEN and the role of parents, I still promote very heavily at Scots. I met with parents enrolling their little three-year-olds this morning. I said, you know, if there's one thing that's really important for us as family, that you're with us on this journey, we're not doing it without you. We'll do this better together. You have a responsibility, you know, as primary educators to work with us, and we take that relationship really seriously. We're a Christian school. We might have some values that conflict along the way, but we'll, you know, we know that they'll play out in really practical ways that will, you know, shape and inform and benefit your son and hopefully your family as well. And it's amazing how open people are to that. People who, that's one of the things I find exciting at Scott. You know, probably we describe it as we're not so much a confessional school as a missional school. It's interesting, probably only about 7% of Scots families would be Presbyterian. Most people wouldn't even know what couldn't even spell Presbyterian. But, you know, we wear kilts around, there's lots of bagpipes. It's, you know, it's one of those really interesting combinations. So you'll have a kid from Shanghai playing the bagpipes, singing Scots to the Fore, thinking, oh, wow, that's a mix. But it really is quite an exciting place. And it's funny where God places you in different ways and you know, you've got to try and manage that mix, and sometimes the grass looks greener on the other side. But my challenge is most of my parents, you know, all CEOs, right? So, you know, they're all pretty high powered, so they don't want to deal with middle management at all. So it goes straight to the top, and I have to keep pushing people down and developing my people to deal with complexity. And you know, they're lovely people, they love their kids and they want the best for them, as your children do as well. But it's an interesting place. But I had a bit of a journey. So I came to Scots in 2007. And again, the vision of the board and the property trust of the Presbyterian Church, which is our owner. So we're a trust, we're a property trust. And Scots sits within that trust, so really it doesn't exist, it's just an activity of that property trust. And so we have trustees, that are elected by the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church, and they elect a council, and that council governs the college and reports up to the trustees. So that, it's a little bit different from an incorporated group or possibly even your own boards, but that was the nature. And so that might mean something as we go through this story. So I tend to say, for me, school leadership is the best job in the world. Like, I love my job. But there are some terrible days, and it really is cyclical like that. And I think as board members, speaking to you, I think most of the people who'll be ahead in your school at some time will love the kids, they'll be passionate about the families, they'll be passionate about their work, and just remember that. They're heavily invested in what they're doing. The danger sometimes as heads of school is you can actually lose your identity a bit. You can actually become the school. I often talk to parents and staff about the fact that I fulfill an office. So I fulfill the office of principal of my school, but I'm Ian Lambert. When I go to the surf and I'm wearing my board shorts around Bondi, that's me, the person. Sometimes in the role I have to do things that I don't really like doing. It's not me. And people call you all sorts of names, they criticise you, they don't understand what you do. So you carry that every day, moment by moment, and that can be a challenge. And I guess what a head looks for all the time is a group of people who can notice the seasons that the whole community goes through. They can really try and tease out, the heart of the person and that person's family. And I'll mention this with Alison. I'll mention this. We went through a little bit of a bad patch, and Alison's father died in the middle of that. And not one person on my council, they knew about it. I mentioned it at a board meeting. No one sent her a card. No one called her. And yet, Alison, made a decision not to work. So pretty much she's worked for free for the school for 12 years and is committed to that. And so those little things can be helpful. And I'm not great at that either. So I think on a board, sometimes there are people who are gift givers and people who encourage and do that sort of thing. So thinking about those sort of soft skills, I think, are really important in keeping, harmony and building trust over time. But I was really proud. I rang my mum and said, "Hey, Mum, I'm on the front page of The Australian. How about that?" So, but it wasn't really a good story. So what had happened, it tells you a little bit about Scots. What happened between late 2015 and sort of most of 2016 was that I'd come up to the ninth year in my tenure. I signed 5-year contracts, and our council had largely changed. So it had morphed over the first 5 or 6 years into another council, and then that council wanted to go in a totally different direction, and they really didn't communicate that particularly well, other than just keep throwing lots of work and being very critical about things. So it got to a point where it got right up to the 19th of December, and my contract actually says you were supposed to do a review that's completed in second term, and give notice, and if you're not going to redo it at that point. But it was left until after speech day. I mean, we have speech day in the Opera House, the big deal, and even the parents are going, why didn't the Chamber Council actually say anything about the principal's contract? So there was kind of nervousness in the community, and so they swore me to secrecy. I wasn't allowed to say anything. So we went away on holidays and sat there and waited for what would happen. And I said to the council, I think you need a communication strategy in our community, because I'm not boasting, but I've actually worked pretty hard. We turned Scots around. We turned it from a $30 million to a $90 million business. We generated $100 million worth of cash for asset redevelopment. Scots had been through a 30-year, we'd grown the percentage of Christian staff and kids and families. We were successful in academics. So we kind of really turned things, and the parents and the alumni of the school were really loving the school, and the council were really out of touch with that. And I respect them. They're all really good people doing the best thing, but they just were not listening. And for me, I'm not a particularly aggressive person. I'm a peacemaker type. So trying to have that conversation, saying, do you want to think about it? Like, I don't mind if you don't renew my contract, that's fine. But I think you need to care for the community a little bit and be sensitive to what happened. So they didn't. And then what happened when we came back effectively in April, the trustees found out that the council weren't going to renew my contract. And they reacted very strongly and said, hang on, why are you doing this? And they called the council in to report to them about their reasons, and then they called myself and five other executive staff in to report, and that then went to a special meeting of the General Assembly, and so the media was onto this. So there were, what was happening over that time, there were leaks out into the media. So pretty much every day on page 103 on major articles that came up in the newspapers is that you had Church Sacks College ruling council. So what the trustees decided to do was they felt that the council hadn't fulfilled its duties carefully and responsibly, and that they were not prepared to budge, and that there'd been a stalemate, and the trustees were looking after the interests of the school and the church and felt that I don't think this is necessary. And the only result really was that they had to step in, and they actually didn't sack the council. They basically just parked them for a period of time and tried to resolve it, but didn't happen. So, you actually got a lot of information coming through in the Sydney Morning Herald, the Australian, the Courier Mail. It was in London on the papers. All this sort of stuff that came up. So I think it was this article, there were 23 bits of misinformation, how I'd misused business class travel, that I'd employed best friends in the school. So really kind of character assassination sort of stuff that was, everyone who knew me was going, there's no way he would do that. Who's leaking this information? So, and then other people, like from Cranbrook School, which is 100 metres away from us, one of their old boys who was a judge, who decided to say, well, Presbyterian Church doesn't have authority to do this. Well, he didn't know anything about it, hadn't read anything. So, but, that was another story that was in there. And, list of allegations. So they supported me with that. What was really a blessing in this time, and I don't know whether I should mention, I won't mention him by name, but that no one had stepped up to be the chairman of trustees of the church at the General Assembly. And a very intelligent retired nuclear scientist stepped in as acting chairman, and and literally this was his year that he stepped into. And when you think of God's goodness, of being able to manage a community, and lots of people are friends and that sort of thing. He was a brilliant chairman. I mean, I could not think of a person who was more graceful, who was intelligent and discerning. He listened. Everyone was trying to push him, but he was setting the pace. He was making sure everyone understood, had time and do that sort of thing. And so he really got through this issue and then sort of stepped aside as acting, and they put in a new person. But it highlights on boards just the importance sometimes of thinking about how will you function in the moment of crisis, not on the good days, but on the rainy days when everyone's at you. And that was a bit like me. Like, when you're in the spotlight, when people throw things at you, it's actually really quite a difficult time to manage your way through that, and lots of people crumble. So, and I'm, don't take this as boastful, this is what other people say to me. Often a lot of principals will come up and say, how did you do it? And I'd say, what? And I said, how did you actually survive? You got to be the only person where the board actually got sacked and not the principal. And when you look across Australia, and particularly a lot of these larger, older schools, that's often the case. When the board makes a decision, they have every right, they have every right to decide who is the principal. And quite frankly, that's one of their fundamental and probably most important jobs, to appoint the head. And I think my answer to that was, and I'll mention this a little bit later, is I think I hold leadership very lightly. My identity is not my job. I love my job. I love the giftedness God's given me. I hope I use that to bless children and their families. So, you know, you feel like there's purpose and everything like that in, when you're doing it. But I think it's really important in any context to recognise that you hold on lightly sometimes. So here's a photo of just a sample. There's a whole bookshelves of all the media monitoring that went on during this time, like, you know, every day. Bit of, you probably can't see all of that, but in the media analysis there, 68% of people across Australia had at least 3.8 news articles that came in terms of reach. So quite phenomenal reach, radio. It's over what? Like a principal's contract not being renewed? So get some perspective. People are dying around the world. But what happens with, say, the Sydney Morning Herald in particular, is we're a little bit of a poster boy for elitism, you know, boys' schools in the eastern suburbs, all sorts of things. So I actually went into the editor of the Sydney Morning Herald and made an appointment and said, we've had 178 articles in 18 months. Can you, like the most any other school's had that we've been able to track through our media monitoring is 3 or 4. Can you actually just give us, like, are we doing something wrong here? What is it? And he said, you're clickbait, right? You're just, people are interested. They want to read about the other side. And you know, if we get a lot of hits, we'll keep printing stories. And I said, well, you know, your header on the Sydney Morning Herald is about honesty and truth and things. I said, give us a break. And so it was really interesting. Personally, it was challenging. And even for the council members who stepped down as council, it was really bad for them. I mean, they were splattered across the papers and, you know, that impacted their family. So, you know, this is when it all unravels. These are the bad days where something little sometimes turns into a monster. And, you know, you're all swarming trying to manage it. And I think one thing I'm pretty proud of, I think, you know, I'm a pretty steely sort of person. My mum and dad, I grew up on a farm. I am sort of someone who'll set a course, and even though I don't feel like it inside, you know, and plenty of times down here, I'm a bit of a surfer, so one of the things, you know, I'd go for a surf because you can actually have a bit of a cry out in the surf and nobody notices because it's just salt water. But when you're back on the job, you know, it's all good. We're going this way, you know, because it's all about the, you know, the boys and what they're doing. You know, and then you get to social media and it was massive. Just, and the amount of people's opinions on, you know, who I am, what an evil person I am, and what the evil people the council are. But, so pretty much, you know, a couple of stats there. In Sydney, you know, lots of things just having over this just one incident, 6.8 million people exposed, impact on parents withdrawing kids from the school. And that was the hard thing. I was thinking parents who've known you for a long time all of a sudden start to think, hang on, there must be something wrong with you. Why would this happen? So I actually put it right down to the fact that Scots has gone through this incredible Christian transformation. It's quite remarkable. And in fact, what's happened is a lot of the Anglican schools and other big church schools are kind of coming to us saying, how did you turn a school that had a church background that had been largely secularized, how did you actually turn that around? And aren't you scared that people won't come to you if you profess to be, you know, very overtly Christian and looking to employ Christian staff? And the answer is, we're full. When I came in 2007, we were not full. We had not had full enrolments for 30 years. We'd been burning $1 million a year. Church had been bailing us out. So the school, they hadn't spent any money on infrastructure for a long time. It was in a pretty bad place. And it wasn't just that we became more Christian, we became thoughtfully Christian. And I kept trying to say to my councils over time, is we need to play the long game. All right, our school's been here for 125 years. We've got to actually bring people into the camp. And we've got to explain things well, and we've got to frame our philosophy around the language we use, the activities we're doing, so it kind of makes sense. You know, Leslie Newbegin talks about the fact that gospel should make sense in the marketplace. And for my community, if the gospel doesn't make sense, then we're not communicating it to them or their sons, you know, very well. So for us, I've felt a lot of this public attention, while at the time felt really negative, it's actually been really positive in the aftermath, because people have, you know, really wanted to come and talk about the Christian stuff that's going on in the school and how that's worked. So it's really opened up some good opportunities and some great partnerships to share as well. But I think, you know, I was thinking about some guiding principles that in any kind of leadership, and you know, when you're looking for a head or a head's looking to you, you know, we like that, you know, talking about, you know, what do we look like when we're feeling confident, we're acting confidently, but where's humility sit with that? And it's not bombastic in any way, but keeping those two things in juxtaposition, and accountability and compassion. You know, there are times, like I can tell you now, right, so I'm about 3 weeks from the end of school. I have not had a night off in fourth term. So I work Saturdays, so I'm at sport on Saturdays, and I've had lots of functions on, you know, church, chapel service, school things on. So I'm not always at my best, you know, and but I give it a good crack most of the time. And so in some ways, you'll have heads in your schools are like that as well. There'll be times when they're going really hard. There'll be things they won't even tell you about because it's not enough time, and things go on all the time, just trying to manage complex people and relationships. But having that, I think, as Christian environments, really working through what's that look like for us when we're all happy, and what's it look like for us, you know, when things aren't going well, and trying to get ahead of the game, I think, is an important work of a board, because we. You know, these things pop up out of nowhere, and they often throw us, and they bring out the worst in us sometimes. So I think being really clear about performance expectations in advance is really important for any of, you know, your business manager. I mean, what do you actually know what you expect? And if you don't, try to work out some things, so setting goals. So I'd gone through a phase with this new council, and again, I say this in respect, but they were wanting to introduce cover, you know, model of governance, and I think in the 18 months prior to my thing, I think we'd written hundreds of policy papers, and they were just throwing them at me and asked me to write things. I'd come back next month, and they'd say, not good enough, throw them out. And really, I think in hindsight, they were trying to annoy me so I'd leave my own volition. But the other side of that, there was just no clarity of it. You know, it was like run left, run right, run that way, go back that way, do it. And it can be really quite confusing. So, you know, having clarity about what you think in advance, and particularly trying to think out a year, 2 years, 3 years, so that you can plan forward is really quite important. And I think, you know, role modelling really respectful peak performance leadership. You know, when the pressure's on and you're working hard, and you know, most people, I can tell you, nearly everyone who works in a school environment, whether you're on a board or as a teacher or a support staff member, they're working pretty hard all the time. And so how you develop kind of respect for that and honour that is really important in an environment. And I think this notion of gracious leadership is something to talk about. We often talk as Christians about God's grace towards us. How is that? What does that look like in our grace towards the people who are serving our community? And you know, how do we create a team culture that is built on really foundational biblical principles? And every school will do that differently, and I think that's okay. You know, there isn't a perfect model. It's one of the great things about God is He likes. I think God's really playful, right? I think He likes lots of different stuff. And he allows us and enjoys us experimenting and having different types of schooling in different contexts, and using the gifts of people in that community differently. And we've got to celebrate that. So I think a place that celebrates the uniqueness of your school community is really important. You know, very important. And I think godly leadership is not soft stuff, you know. It is leadership, whether it's from the principal or from the board. It's not just all kind of love and cuddles and kiss and saying nice things. I think it's really important to be, honest and open, and there's a foundation of trust established. I love it when one of my board members come along and go, Ian, you wrote a report last month and it was just a bit superficial. You said you'd do this and it didn't follow that. And I'd rather say, look, thanks for sharing that. Sorry, I'm going to try and get that right next month. Rather than not say it, and then next month you do it again, and next month you do it. And after a while it becomes a mountain. And, the only answer is out the door. And I think, godly leadership is strategic. I'm a very, my personality type is really annoying. So I don't know if you've done a lot of those Myers-Briggs, and my wife's laughing, but strength finders. So I'm a maximizer, right? So what that means is when someone comes in and says, oh, Dr. Lambert, I've got this idea that if I just do A, B, and C, we could get D, and I'd go, awesome, right? And I'll spend 15 minutes, and I'd go, yeah, but if we actually put E and F and G in there, and we could do this and this and this. So that's, unfortunately, that's what a maximizer does, is try to maximize kind of resources and human effort to get the best potential for as many people as you can. So that can really annoy people. It excites me, but it does annoy you. And probably in the personality type, calls me a quester. So everything I do in life's got to, there's got to be a purpose, right? I'm purpose driven. So I will go out of my way to look after the downtrodden, because I just hate seeing people mistreated. I'm very conscious of people watching the way I live my life, but I'm okay with that. So I kind of like that challenge, and I like being in a board. And what's funny, my new board, which are an amazing group of people, who've really encouraged me more than anything, they've just come out and said, look, we know what you like, so we'll put some parameters around you, but we want you to play to your strengths as much as you can. And this was a movie and a quote from Chief Executive Magazine talking about, I believe that teams of all types within any industry can reap great rewards by displaying respectful behaviours as they seek to reach greater heights, and wherever that is. And I think, talking about what are respectful behaviours, because we all actually have a different view of that. And whether that's the way we acknowledge things or the way we greet people, but when it's working, it's a really great thing. And you'd know that in your boards. Like when everything's coming together, it's an amazing time. But guess what? It won't last. Because particularly when Christianity is flourishing in your midst, you will get challenged, and it'll get picked apart in the least obvious ways through the least obvious people. And that's part of the way Satan divides us, and we should be more conscious of that than anybody. So we need to be thinking about that, and finding the strength to fight a good fight of faith, because I think we're going to go through a period of 10 or 20 years at least where we're really going to have to stand up, whatever you want to call it, man up, woman up, and make a stand on stuff, because it really is important for our children, and our schools are the last battlefront. I really think schools, even more so than churches, have become the kind of community hubs for a lot of people, and they're expecting us. I mean, they're loving it when someone believes something and actually lives it out in a really authentic way, and people want to belong, and I think our Christian schools have got to do that. So our mission back in 1893, our moderator said, Scots College pursues and encourages higher learning for the common weal. Now, common weal was a term that meant for the common good. That was before we had a Commonwealth, but it basically meant there was a Christian notion of higher learning, so education was important. We're going to develop young men and women who are going to go out and serve this world, this community, in all its nooks and crannies. And what we've done in our strategic plan is gone back and picked out what we call the honourable traditions, those kind of beautiful little things in our history that are threads that are weaving through, and we're trying to use those to blast ourselves into the future, and it's amazing how the community belongs to that. So for some of you might be in schools who are only 10 years old, some might be 25 years old, and you'll have some gems in your community. There'll be some great speeches or great characters that really said meaningful things, and you need to just start. I'm a great believer that, you know, there's a reason for history, and it provides the glue for us to give us certainty, particularly going into an uncertain future as well. So that's very important. So, you know, again, in terms of our strategic intent for the next 25 years, it's been great work in the college. You know, we're very deliberate. I've been working with my team on a lot of putting things in print. So foundational, as well as our strategic plan, we have five key foundational papers are about our educational philosophy, about the vocation of a school. What does it mean when God calls you as a school to serve in the community? So that's all documented in our school. So if I get hit by a bus, all my team know that. They believe that. They know that that's where our values come from. That's where our vision comes from. Our council, we work together on teasing that out. And I think don't underestimate that work. Don't just get caught up in, you know, shoes, socks and car parks. Because they don't make that much difference in the end. You know, but, you know, again, pretty obvious in Romans that we know God works all things together for good for us. And being a leader when everything's going wrong is really kind of the test of our mettle, both whether you're the chairman. And I'll make this point, I was just having a conversation before, you know, some people don't like being leaders. And I think that's one of God's little ways that he kind of plays with us and grows us sometimes, that you can be in a position going, I'm not a leader, I don't want to lead this group, and yet he opens the doors up and guess what, everyone votes you in and you're the leader, and that's a great opportunity. There's a reason for that happening, and then work that out. I think it's really important on boards to have leaders who are really clear. They have great, they build really good relationships with the head. And that's because they understand each other. There's real trust there. It doesn't mean you're best friends and you go out fishing together, but you kind of understand each other, what makes you tick, and you can call each other on things and kind of, you know, test the pressure around the place. I talked about holding on lightly, accept your responsibility. One thing I did was, what was my part in the mess? Like, what have I done wrong? How can I not, you know, could I have done better myself? You've got to admit it was a mess. And I think, I hope others have discussed, you know, done that as well. Separate yourself personally, just to remain sane, not have a breakdown from the role and the circumstances. Don't get kind of too embedded in your meaning is your job, or, you know, people won't love me anymore if I don't have this job. And I think, you know, have a sanctuary for yourself. I think having people around, I think that's really good encouragement for your leaders. A lot of heads I meet around the place don't have any friends. And it's not because they're not friendly people, but they're so busy working, they actually don't have time to keep up friendships. So they've probably got people in the past, but they don't call them anymore. And so who do they go to? So they go to their wife, and then she just gets dumped on. Or they go to the husband, and he gets dumped on. So be encouraging that as a board as well in different ways. And I'm fortunate. I mean, one of the things, that, you know, one of the greatest blessings for me was my second son, who's a bit of a gym junkie, when this first blew out, he said, Dad, you're fat. I'm going to wake you up at 5:30 every morning. This is my way of loving you, tough love, and I'm not going away. I don't care. And I'm going to take you to the gym every morning, 6 days a week, 5:30. Now, I had the best 18 months, and I still go to the gym every morning. But in the midst of this, I felt so healthy that I think my mind was so much better and clearer. And I'd say that to you as board members, like, if you come under pressure, like, make sure you go for the walk. Even if you've got to get up early and go to bed early or whatever it is, but really look after yourself, because I think we're not looking after ourselves well, because we're working ridiculous hours, and I don't think that's godly. I don't think we're role modelling to the children well when we do that. And this is me, maybe this is a maximizer. Like, life is an amazing adventure. Like, you know, God's put us on this incredible planet, do amazing things, be courageous. Maybe I'm getting older, but, you know, I'm just sick of people who back away from the hard issues when they know that it's the right thing and they should have said something. And all you want is another two people to stand next to you when you do it. And teach that. I mean, encourage that in your school, on your boards. Like, encourage your staff to be courageous. If you don't take risks, you won't do anything. Like the Bible is... The Bible would not get through the risk management process anymore. Let's face it. So you do have to put protective as much as you can to be wise and do that sort of thing, but there will be opportunities that God will open doors, and you need to get your community prepared for that and be prepared to step through those and do that really well. And I think the other thing for me, if I made a good move in all of this, is what happened is when right in the middle of this whole thing is I gave in my resignation, and it was a sincere resignation. You know, I went to the chairman, it wasn't the original chairman, but it was the person put in to manage the mess, and I just said, you know what, I actually care more about the school, and if I stay, as much as some of you want me to, if I stay, I think it's going to cause so much division that it's just going to damage the kids' experience, and I don't think that's worth it. So, you know what, I'll get another job somewhere else. I don't know where, but we'll go and do that. So I gave it to him, and he was a pretty dour sort of guy, but nice guy. I really liked him. He said, oh, okay, I don't think it's a good idea, but I'll take it. And then he emailed the other council members. They called an emergency meeting. They rang Alison up. They got us over and said, we're not accepting it because we want you to stay. But I think that's something to maybe talk to your heads, or one of you talk to your heads about it. Like, if things aren't working out, help them, you know, to imagine life on the other side. And I think, I don't know why I did that. I felt I'd worked really hard for the first, 10 years in the school, and we'd done a lot, and I didn't want that to get eroded. So I think generally my commitment was to the school and to God's working in that school, and maybe I shouldn't continue it, even though I believed I was probably in the right and others weren't. So think about some of those things, and submitting to one another in Christ is a really out of reverence for Christ. You know, it's not just you submit, but it's out of reverence that we're kind of duty bound to be like this. And we're not perfect, and I'm still trying to get better and better every day, and again, I still have great respect for the council, the college that thought they were doing a great job and may still want to be there, and they're not there, and we've made a decision not to ever be rude, and always try and be gracious and welcoming to them, because they committed a lot of their time as well to the school. So schools are funny places. Everyone's been to school. We've all been to different schools. You've all had different experiences. They're really different on the inside sometimes when you're right in the heart of it. Like, I have a lot of boys and even parents who go, what do you do all day? Like, you just sit around your office. Like, what do you do? And so it must be really easy. You just tell people to do things and they just do stuff. And you think, that is so far from reality. But that's their view. Where's that come from? I don't know. They are interesting places, but they're great places. And I think, my little chat here today is, I think, to, number one, thank the Christian schooling movement in Australia for the great work that's been done over decades and decades. It's transformed my life. To give a bit of a case study on, stuff doesn't always work out, but you've got to work your way through that, and you will. And also that call out, I think we can all learn off each other in different ways, and certainly for us at Scots, we really feel part of our mission, as well as serving our kids, is to actually serve other schools. So we have been blessed with ridiculous resources, and the only way I can justify that is is to actually use those resources for God's kingdom to help others. And whether that's, we invite people, we run conferences, we send teachers out, we try and do things for other boards, and we want to do that. And I think there's a lot of other these types of schools that love to support you if you build that relationship with them. So thanks very much. That's me. All the best.